Hello, and welcome to That's Theatre Darling, a podcast that shouts from the rooftops about the skill, creativity, and passion of all of the people who make theatre happen. My name is Amy, and I am thrilled to have you here. Let's get the show on the road, shall we? In today's episode, I am delighted to introduce to you a hugely talented actor. As well as being captivating to watch on stage, she is also just a joy to be around in the rehearsal room and generally brings such a lovely energy into a company. She also has an incredible ability to play a trombone while lying on her back doing crazy leg kick dance moves, which is just joyous. She is the wonderful Evelyn Miller. Hello!
That is honestly the loveliest introduction I think I've ever had. How nice. I'm very, very touched.
When I heard the trombone bit back, it sounded a bit like a euphemism, which it absolutely is not. She's lying on her back, playing the trombone, kicking her legs in the air.
Really vividly remember that rehearsal and just thinking, yeah. Are you mad? Are you mad? But no, I don't think I've ever worked so hard at anything, nor been more proud. You want me to lie on my... What? It's all fine. We got there in the end.
It was just, yeah, brilliant. Thank you so much for joining me. It is lovely to have you here. Have you ever been on a podcast before?
This is my first ever podcast. I've listened to a million, but this is very exciting, Amy. Thanks for having me.
Very exciting. So we met at the Globe working on the summer tour, in which we did three plays, Pericles, Comedy of Errors and Twelfth Night. I sadly didn't come on the tour with you, which I was really sad about, but I was just employed for the rehearsal period. So it was a very kind of surreal experience for me when I was watching on press night, because all of a sudden I was like in the audience watching you guys, not with you, which was very, very strange. But how was the tour?
Oh, it was, I mean, looking back on it now, it was like the best thing and feels like I can't even believe that it happened. The idea that we were kind of bouncing around various different countries and meeting different people and you know, constantly getting on planes was just very surreal now. But it was so odd. I feel like you were such an integral part of that rehearsal process. And the amount of times that we made kind of panicked runs over to you. Amy, please, can you tell me where I'm standing?
Because it was so massive. I mean, you were doing three so plays, massive. Playing multiple characters in each play. It was just insane. Totally. So to have it all written down, I guess, was, kind of quite
very,
an integral resource.
Very important. But it was great fun. I mean, I think doing Pericles was great fun because people don't know it very well. And I think that's quite a special thing with a Shakespeare play, that you have an audience who don't necessarily know the end. I think that's really unusual. I think, you know, obviously people know that Romeo and Juliet doesn't end that well, but there's something really nice about being able to kind of surprise an audience. That felt like a fun one.
Would you say Pericles is your favourite then?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think looking back on it, maybe Pericles. The Comedy of Errors was lovely because I feel like it's one of those that actually I had a lot of friends and family who... Shakespeare's not their thing. They wouldn't kind of consider it to be something they were interested in, but they still walked away from that one like, oh my God, I laughed so much. Yeah. And that's really special. I think there's something really nice about a show that can just be for everyone and can kind of surprise people that it is easier to understand than they think. Also always fun when you have twins who absolutely don't look like each other.
Yes. It's like really kind of... asking the audience just to be like, these are twins. You have to believe
that. These are twins now. That,
you know,
this is it.
It doesn't matter what they look like.
Precisely.
And they are so identical that they keep getting mixed up in all of these crazy situations. Yeah, joyful. Where was your favourite place that you toured to?
Oh, wow, goodness. I've been thinking about it so much this year. I feel like, I don't know, we were, that's tricky. We went to a lot of places that were just really good fun and really beautiful. Singapore was really incredible and just a kind of endlessly fascinating place to explore, both in terms of its history and the kind of links of its history with England. And, you know, that's always a fascinating place, I think, when you're touring, especially with a kind of, I suppose, a theatre that feels like an English institution. It feels really important to kind of explore what England has meant to these various different places. We were in Hong Kong during the Chinese National Day. So that was very surreal. We were kind of doing, we thought the shows would be cancelled, I mean, to be honest, but we were doing Comedy of Errors, and outside there was tear gas. We couldn't leave in between, you know, the matinee and the evening because there were police outside and tear gas had been released. And yeah, that was all very sobering,
crazy.
I think.
Yeah,
and puts things into perspective, doesn't it? When you're feeling like, I think we're like, oh, a bit tired of this play. And then like, oh, sure, but we're not fighting for our lives. That's, but it was a, just an amazing opportunity to travel. I feel so lucky. I honestly don't think I'll ever get over how incredibly lucky I feel to have travelled with theatre in the way that I have. It's amazing. Sorry, Amy, don't want to rub that in.
Yeah. All right,
we wish
I didn't
you'd
come on the tour,
but whatever. It was so sad. We'd have found a part for you, Amy.
Just a little walk-on part.
There were loads of parts.
Yeah, there were loads of parts.
There were too many parts.
So many parts. Okay, so I would love to start by asking you what your very first memory was of being in a theatre. Like, what do you remember about it?
I'm pretty sure that that was on, I think it was maybe my sixth birthday. My little brother had just been born, prematurely, about a week before my birthday, and my mum had been in hospital, and then she kind of surprised me and we all went to the theatre and I got all dressed up and I remember feeling like just so grown up. We went to see Pinocchio, a classic.
Nice.
And at the end, in the curtain call, the actor playing Pinocchio looked at me and smiled. And I, like, it honestly took me until I was about, you know, definitely a teenager before I realised that he's just an actor who looked into the audience and smiled at a child. Like, that is all that happened. When I was six, I was like, this is, like, I am a chosen one. This is the start of the rest of my life. I just remember feeling so special.
Hey, maybe it was. Maybe he did choose you.
Oh my God, probably. Probably he was like, this little kid who's been wiggling all the way through my show. But it just felt magical. It felt like such a treat and it felt so, so exciting. And just, I suppose that feeling of looking at the actors and being like, I can't believe you're looking at me, is, you know, representative maybe of how I felt about it as a child. It was just like the most amazing magical thing that people were doing. Little did I know.
Yeah.
It's a real fall from grace.
Cut to X amount of years later.
Right.
So I'm very interested to know how you got into theatre and how that journey continued to where you are now. Could you give me a bit of a kind of highlights reel of how it all went down?
I think I always loved acting. I think I was pretty shy as a child. So my mum sent me along to drama classes because I think she hadn't really had the opportunity. They didn't have a lot of money growing up. I mean, nor did we, but we had a bit more spare know, money. And so, she just sent me to drama club and I loved it. My best friends are kind of still from that. Some of my best friends are still from that kind of group that I've known them since we were kind of 10. And I don't know. I think I've always felt most myself, I suppose, in those kind of environments and that kind of those amazing teams that you build. I think there's something so special about that. Anyway, I thought about doing something sensible because everyone obviously tells you it's a really hard career. I don't think that you truly understand what that means when you're 16 and 17. I didn't know anyone who worked in theatre. So I think I was just like, no, it'll be fine because I love it. And, you know, I'm really glad that I was kind of naive and innocent and just went for it.
Because I guess it could be so easy to be put off.
Totally.
And actually, like, you know, the joy of it, you need that passion and that joy to be able to get to where you're going to be. Like,
yeah, exactly. And obviously, at times, I wish I'd taken a biology degree. I went to Guildhall and, I suppose it was a kind of, I think maybe when I was deciding what to do after A-levels, lots of people were graduating. The economy was in a state and lots of people were kind of, it's all over the news. People are graduating from really sensible degrees and still unable to find work. So I thought, well, I might as well be unemployed in something I like.
Yeah.
And very here we sensible. Are in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah. Well, yes.
It's worked out perfectly.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
So after drama school, how did you find the kind of process of getting into work? Like, did you find that transition quite easy is a weird word, but do you know what I mean? Like, was it, do you find that you kind of, there was a lot out there, or was it quite, you know, tricky?
I don't know. I feel like I've always... I was just like so blindsided when I got into drama school. I couldn't believe it. I think I spent the whole 3 years I was there mildly terrified and feeling like there must have been some sort of clerical error. I can't believe they've let me in. There must have been some like Evwyn Miller maybe that they actually wanted. I don't know. And so I feel like in some ways that's been quite a nice thing, because I feel like I'm so overwhelmingly like amazed, or certainly for the first few jobs. I was like, I can't believe someone's paying me to do this. Like, what? This isn't, you don't get paid to do this. But no, I think also the kind of reality of what life as a working actor is kicks in pretty quickly. I think you leave drama school and, you know, inevitably everyone thinks that you're going to be like that famous person in the year above you. And everyone thinks they're going to be, you know, and then you kind of, you start to see that some of your friends are doing really well and some of your friends are really struggling. And that's really tough on individuals. That's tough on a friendship group. But I think it, I don't know, if you kind of make it through that as a friendship group and as a person, I think it teaches you quite a lot. And it teaches you to be resilient and kind and generous and to keep envy in check. That feels like the most important thing, because it will just... eat you up. You meet people, don't you, in the industry who've just been kind of destroyed by envy, and it's really sad. I don't know. I've always tried to say to myself, like, I will do this for as long as I love it. For whatever reason I stop loving it, whether that's just because I'm not getting enough work and the lifestyle is too stressful, or whether, you know, I don't know, maybe I'll get bored of it. I don't think so. But, you know, I feel like that's quite a nice thing in my head. I'm like, I will do this as long as I love it. If I don't love it, I will stop and do something else. I don't know what I would do. Yeah. But, you know.
God knows. We're all trying God to work knows. That out, aren't we? Right. We need to work that thing out. God. Yeah. Let's not talk about that.
No, absolutely fine. La, 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 la.
So I find auditions a very intriguing part of the process, because I just have absolutely no experience of them, obviously. So I was wondering if you could tell me a bit about your kind of your experience of auditions. Do you have any horror stories, or equally, do you have any like lovely memories of being in auditions? I'd love to know a bit about it.
Oh, they're just a madness, really. I mean, I think, you know, there's this odd, it feels like a kind of, an odd contract where you're nervous, obviously. You know, there's never been a time I'm not nervous, even if you feel like you can do it and you'd be really good. And there are there are definitely times where I feel like, oh, I would cast myself in this. Other times where I feel like, I definitely wouldn't cast myself in this, but I'll give it a go, sure. Yeah. And hope that maybe, I don't know, I can surprise you. But you know, you're nervous, you're pretending not to be nervous, you're aware that you're an actor, so you should be able to act not nervous. Yeah, I've had some terrible ones. Oh, just terrible ones. There was one really early on. I love my agents. They're amazing. And they've been just the most incredibly supportive, wonderful, wonderful, responsive people. I feel very lucky. But there was one really early on where they sent me up for something. It's like a lovely little tour, would have been a really nice job. And they sent an email saying like, oh, you know, you only have 2 days to prepare. Is that okay? And I was like, oh, to be honest, that feels like loads of time. I feel like quite regularly you get something that's, you know, for the next day. And then I read the email properly and realized it required, oh, it's so bad, a Trinidadian accent. And my family are Jamaican, but I absolutely, like, I do not have, that is not in my repertoire. That is not even close. But I think because I just graduated and I was just with my agents, I was like, oh, I guess I'll just, I can't say no. I can't possibly turn down an audition. So I called my dad and I got my dad to read the lines in his like quite bad Jamaican accent. Like, my dad was also born in England. So I'm now doing like a bad imitation of my dad's bad Jamaican accent for a Trinidadian act. Like, just, it was a car crash. It was an absolute, I mean, of course it was a car crash. I also just think, like, up until that point, all of the auditions I'd had had been like me in a room full of white people. So I was like, oh, it's going to be fine. Everyone's going to be white because obviously everyone in this industry is white. So it'll be fine. Yeah. I'll just say like, oh, I'm actually half Jamaican. They can't tell me that my accent's bad. I walk in and it's obviously like everyone's black. And I just, honestly, it's still, I feel like I'm still not able to fully laugh at it. It was almost 10 years ago now. Just awful, Amy.
Oh my God. No. I'm so sorry for bringing that back.
I know, truly. What sort of a question? But
do you have any nice ones to counteract
it? Nice ones. I think, you know, sometimes it's just like it doesn't feel like you're auditioning. You end up just having a really interesting chat when it's a good play, or, you know, it's just sometimes lovely to talk and you feel like, oh, actually, even if I don't get that part, I've had a lovely discussion with these people who are passionate about the same thing I'm passionate about. And that feels really special. Mm. I definitely think, you know, being in a room again, like, you know, these rose tinted glasses we're all staring through at the moment.
Yeah.
Being in a room with people and doing acting at the moment, it's like, oh God, what a dream.
Yeah. But I think also in that situation, I guess, you know, if you're having those interesting conversations and you're having those like special moments with people, yes, you might not get that part, but you've then had these, you know, they then know you as a person and an actor, and they know you, you know, so that next time they're going to be like, oh, actually, I had a really interesting conversation with this actor, you know, like, yeah.
Precisely.
It's a good opportunity, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Putting stuff in the bank.
Yeah, exactly.
Not literally in the bank, unfortunately.
So when it comes to receiving a script and starting that journey of building a character, do you have kind of a set process that you usually go through, like certain things that you like to do personally, or is that very dependent on the rehearsal process, the director, any of those kind of factors?
I think that kind of differs every time, actually, which I quite like. I know that some people have really exact processes that will always do the same thing and approach a script in exactly the same way to kind of find their character. But I think, I mean, I suppose in part because I've just worked on quite a large variety of styles of shows. I feel like sometimes you're looking for something that's like incredibly naturalistic and nuanced and deep and, you know, subtle. And other times, like, that's just not what the play requires. It needs to be broader and sillier, and maybe then kind of, you know, working from, or, you know, or in the case of the Globe Tour we did together, you have like 13 characters. So you need to make
speed
is key, and they all just need to be like different. That's very important. Mm. If an audience is watching a show, you can't, the difference between those, you know, 14 characters you're playing in, you know, across one kind of 3 hour or however long they were play, they have to be really noticeably different, which I think requires different ways of working, you know, the outside in, inside out thing, I feel is to talk about. Yeah, but I quite like that. I like the variety. I like differing how I approach something depending on, you know, the room and the people you're working with and the director, and all of that feels exciting to me.
I really find it fascinating how actors have such different processes, and like in terms of, I was just thinking then just about like writing down notes. Like I can't actually, are you a note taker?
Yeah, I am. I mean, probably not as fastidious as I should be about taking notes, but I definitely do. Yeah, I do need to write things down. And that's really changed. I think when I first graduated, I was just like, oh, I'll remember it. And like often I did, like I did just remember it, but now no.
Yeah.
My aging brain.
But I feel like there's actors that don't write anything down, and I find that very stressful. I'm like, you're going to forget that. Like, how do you just write it down?
For sure. Yeah. Mm. And I think I've just a few times been that actor who's like, yeah, I'll remember that my exit's changed. And then, no, I didn't. Obviously, I didn't.
Yeah. So what would you say is your favourite part of being an actor?
Oh, I think when you have those jobs, or I suppose more realistically, those days on jobs where everything just comes together and the people you're working with are amazing and, you know, you're proud of the show you're doing, the audience response is lovely, you feel really proud of the work you're doing. Mm. It just doesn't feel like a job. There are moments and days where you can't, I still can't believe that I get paid to do what I do. those moments aren't all the time, obviously. Yeah. Obviously, there are times where you feel like you're being like woefully underpaid for what you're doing and the work you're putting in and the hours you're doing outside of the all of that, of course. But but yeah, the fact that sometimes my job doesn't feel like it's a job is incredible. That's such a privilege. I mean, you know, even the idea that you're able to choose a job because you like it is a madness for the vast majority of people in the world. So that feels, yeah, really special. Just the chance to do something you love is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And then to flip it, what would you say is your least favourite thing about being an actor?
Oh, the lifestyle of it. And just like, God, yeah, the auditions, the out of work, the not knowing when your next thing is going to come in, having to kind of go into auditions and pretend that that's just normal and fine, and the self-tapes, you know, at the moment where you're having more and more, it's less that you're kind of in a room with a person and you're talking about the show or the play or the film or whatever, you're just in your bedroom. And then you send the tape off into nowhere. And then most of the time you never hear anything back. And I think it can be really punishing. I mean, I think that's I think that's the same for freelancers everywhere. I totally think that's something that everyone who works in the industry has in common. I don't think that's kind of specific to actors, but I do think that mad thing of going into an audition and feeling like you have to pretend, or you, it doesn't feel like you can be honest about, you know, this has been a really hard month. That feels odd.
Yeah, it's all a kind of, it's actually another performance, isn't it?
Totally.
It's, you know, I'm performing that I'm going to be the most amazing person for this role, whereas actually 5 minutes before the audition, you're like sweating and,
exactly. My makeup's all down my face and oh God, like what should I wear and what makes me look confident and oh no. Yeah. Like, yeah, and they're going
and
in.
And you breeze
like, hey,
into the room.
How are you? So nice to meet you. Thanks for having me in. Like, what? Awful. Oh, nightmarish. Nightmarish. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And I can imagine the self-tape thing is like pretty, I was gonna say soul destroying, but that makes it sound like awful, but like just the fact that you don't get anything back, like that you don't get any feedback from that must be really, really hard.
Definitely. I think, and that's really been a big shift in the last couple of years. I definitely think when I was a teenager, you know, people were like, oh, that's a very hard job, very hard career, you'll get a lot of rejection. And I remember wishing that I got a lot of rejection. What you get is a lot of silence. And I think like quite a lot of theatres, the Globe have, you know, changed their policy on that. They will always tell you if you haven't got something.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you hear of people, I know someone who eventually got a really big part in a really big film, but she was waiting for a year. They didn't tell her for a year, you know.
Yeah.
And it's that madness of kind of checking your emails, refreshing your emails every time you get a call on your phone. It's like, oh, is it? For a year. Madness. Madness.
There's so much waiting and hoping involved in that, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Like just, you know, if somebody doesn't let you know, there's just always that part of you that's like, oh, well, maybe I'll just, you know, keep on pinning my hopes on that thing, you know.
Yeah.
Hard.
Because I think my first job ever was a Holby My first job ever was a Holby City episode. And I heard I'd got it about 12 weeks after I'd auditioned, which is mad now.
That's crazy.
That's such a long time to wait. But I think that really set me up in such bad, you know, such bad habits. Yeah. I feel like now if a week has gone by and I haven't heard anything, you know, I can kind of tell myself to put it to bed. It's not happening. But in those early days, I was like, oh, well, it's only been 7 weeks. So I guess I'll keep waiting. Like,
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
God.
Really mad. Terrible.
Okay. So I would love to move on now to the quick fire questions section.
Fabulous.
These are questions that are coming at you live in the moment. You have not seen them before. So if you're ready, I'll jump in with my first question.
Excellent.
Okay. What is your most embarrassing moment that you've had on stage?
Oh gosh. I think once I was playing Hotspur, I was meant to jump onto this kind of platform and deliver a battle speech. And instead I jumped into the platform and then was just gripping it, led over it. I think just took a moment where it felt like the world had stopped and then just kind of continued delivering my lines, but in just such a sad way. I think I just didn't even cover it well. One of my very good friends in the cast had to walk off stage because he was laughing so much. He said afterwards, like, I just knew I wasn't going to get it back. I needed 3 minutes. It was too funny to even try and stand on stage. Turning up stage wouldn't have done it. Like, I needed to get into the wings. That was really bad.
No.
It was really embarrassing. I'm very clumsy.
Oh, bless you.
So bad.
And that's really hard when you're like in front of a lot of people.
Oh my goodness. And you're like trying to play a warrior and you're, you know, oh, terrible, terrible, terrible.
So actors' dressing tables are fascinating to me. I feel like they're always a little window into the type of person you are. What is always on your dressing table or in the dressing room?
Biscuits, always biscuits, crackers and biscuits, food, always food, so much food, interval snacks, in between scene snacks.
Purely snacks, covered in snacks.
100% snacks.
Love that. Girl after my own heart.
Yeah.
I like to have snacks everywhere around me all the time.
Absolutely. Got to keep your energy up. Very important.
Yeah. What would you say is the biggest misconception about your job?
I think maybe that it's very glamorous. I think a lot of people, especially when you're on tour, a lot of people are like, oh, are you staying at the hotel in the moment? No, I'm staying in an old lady's smallest bedroom. Mm-hmm. And if I arrive after 10 p.m., she'll be livid and shout at me.
Yeah.
this is not a kind of fabulously, we don't all wear feather boas and, you know, no, we're kind of eating tins of baked beans in the green room.
Yeah. I'd love to, the people that think that it's a glamorous like industry, I'd love to take them backstage in a theatre. Just for
100%.
Like half an hour.
Yeah.
Just backstage tour. And then you'd be like, this.
Oh, sorry.
This is where they didn't spend the money. Front of house is where they did.
And it is mad that I feel like some of the theatres where, you know, sometimes you kind of come in through the auditorium on the first day for whatever reason.
Like,
and then they, oh my goodness, look at it. Look at the ceiling. Look at the seats. And then someone kind of pushes that creaky, creaky door that leads you to backstage. And suddenly it's like, oh, right. Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Peeling walls that haven't been touched since like the 1920s.
Lovely damp on the wall.
So nice.
Oh my God, there's a theatre. I won't say what theatre, but there's a theatre that I've worked in that there's like a little like washing room because it's got like the washing machine, the dryer and the ironing board and the ceiling is black. Like black.
No.
With mold. Because they've got like a condenser, they've got a dryer that's not a condenser dryer. So like literally it's just like the dryer air.
Oh my God.
It's so gross.
So
like every time I walked
bad.
In there, I was like, oh God, I hate it. I don't want to catch
me.
Things from in here. But yeah, no glamour
so
here.
No glamour.
The glamour is saved for on stage and all the nice fancy
100%.
Parties. Press snack parties.
Exactly.
Lovely, glamorous.
lovely, very glamorous. Yeah.
Yeah. if you could put together, I feel like I sort of might know the answer to this, but if you could put together a Tech Week survival kit, what would be in it?
Yeah,
I mean, you're going to say snacks. What else would be in it?
What a silly question. Snacks. I mean, like, genuinely, I feel like the way I mark Tech Week is that all bets are off. I'm not, you know, I feel like I eat healthily. I'm not, like, I don't think the idea of dieting is a particularly healthy one. I just, like, I eat a lot of vegetables. I like veg are nice. But Tech Week, all bets are off. Absolutely anything I fancy. Maybe a pillow, probably a blanket, just for those little maybe under your dressing table naps that you need.
Those glamorous things.
Yeah, I would say also maybe some headphones, just to have a little moment of peace to yourself. You can put a little podcast on. Why not this one?
Yeah. Thanks for that little click there for
Don't
me
worry.
To
I often also have quite a lot of like essential oil or rescue remedy. I don't know if that works. Yeah. It's just brandy, isn't it? I don't know. But just something.
Yeah, I think it is.
I'm pretty sure it is just brandy that my mum used to give me when I was a child, but sure, it's okay. We'll talk about that another time. Like some sort of kind of lavender calming thing that when I feel like this isn't possible, we don't have enough time. What is this sick joke? How many people are coming? When? Something calming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good idea. If you were given free rein with no repercussion or response, what single thing would you like to say to the following people? So, for instance, if I was said that I wanted to say one thing to an actor, it would be, don't look at me if you don't want me to feed you a line. Because the amount of times that's happened and then I've got told off.
That's so good.
For feeding them a line. And they're like, I was just taking a dramatic pause.
I was just taking a dramatic pause. I'm looking at you, Amy. What are you doing?
Yeah, don't look
at me. Hilarious. That is so funny. But then equally, I've seen it so many times when actors are looking at, you know, a DSM and then, and then they're like, yes. So, but you didn't say anything.
I didn't know.
Yeah, they went in.
We have to be mind readers.
Yeah, of course.
So yeah, that's what I would say. These can be negative things. They can be positive things. Whatever you would like to say without a response.
Yeah.
So the first person I'm going to give you is playwright.
Oh, that's very good, isn't it? What would I say? That's tricky. Because it depends. I mean, you know, I think, what would I say to a playwright? I think maybe just well done. I think the kind of self-knowledge and self-belief you need to be a playwright to kind of keep persevering and pushing through and believing that your play is good enough to be put on. And, you know, especially when we know that it's not an industry that's equal in terms of whose voices are getting heard most. I think, I would say well done.
That's a great answer. I also think like there's this real kind of, I often think it must be so hard to hand over something that you have like spent so much time and put so much of your brain into for then other people to maybe mess it up.
I actually don't think I could do it. I'd be a dragon. I would be an absolute... Sorry,
I'm like, I didn't imagine it like that. Sorry,
The stress is actually on this word.
Yeah.
And if you could, so I think I'm imagining that maybe your character at this point is less. Yeah. Awful. Yeah. I'd be terrible.
And I mean, I definitely had writers like that in the room. Yes, I'm like, please get out.
Let it go now.
I definitely agree. Well done is, absolutely. Mm. DSM.
Thank you. Like a huge, I feel like it would be, I can't imagine how bad I would be at that job. The idea, oh Lord, the idea that my organisational skills are fundamental to the successful running of a production, like brings me out in hives. Also fantastic stationery. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Absolutely.
always.
Movement director.
Oh, that depends, doesn't it? That always depends. Because obviously I'll name no names, but I will name, like, working with some people like Polly Bennett is sensational. And the value she adds to productions is just unquantifiable, I think. It's amazing the lift that she gives and people like her give to a production. And then there are other people. I just don't know if what you're doing is a job. What? Are you joking? But no, like generally, I think, I think as with any job, there are obviously people who do it really well and people who don't do it so well. But I think also it always makes me sad when you see someone who you know is really talented in any context, but I think it happens quite a lot to movement directors, but the director won't give them the time and space they need. That's always sad. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because they're just not able to show, they're not able to add what they have been brought in to add.
Precisely. Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah, that is really hard. I often find that with fight directors as well.
Yeah.
They often have such short periods of time to really cram it all in. It's like, well, you're not going to get a good fight if you don't allow the time to be able to choreograph it.
100% not. Yeah. Mm. Oh, I totally agree.
Lighting designer.
Oh, I mean, that is just a world I do not understand. It's amazing to me. You know, sometimes when you kind of get into the auditorium during tech and you can see the screens and how they're, I just have no clue of how that all works. It's a magic to me. It's a total magic. Mm. I don't know. Yeah. I think that's part of what's so lovely about theatre. I'm aware that all industries are kind of based on teams of people who have different prowesses and skills working together to make something. I'm aware that that's how like lots of things work, but I don't know. It feels like the variety of the totally different, the totally opposing skill sets and interests that go into making a piece of theatre, I think is really special. And again, that sick fear I have of the idea of having to be a DSM. I mean, like, the hilarity of me. I can barely turn a computer on, Amy. Let alone design a show.
You're being so lovely about everyone. I love that, like, the last person I did this with, they were like, yeah, really bad thing about this person. Really, like,
shut
I
up
tell
and
them
get
this.
Out my face.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas you're like, they're brilliant. They're amazing. I love them. Oh, my gosh.
Honestly, please.
keep lighting me. Keep helping
please,
me.
Don't turn the lights off.
Okay. Next person is a fellow actor.
Like, you know, you're probably nice, but if you're not nice, please just be nice to everyone. Why is it? I feel like there is this mad... Sometimes I get really annoyed with people who work backstage because I think sometimes they assume that because you're an actor, you're going to be an arsehole. That, like, upsets me. But also... Also, I totally understand it because I've definitely worked with actors who are just so unpleasant to people. And that idea of
for seemingly no reason.
For no reason other than this like imagined hierarchy that they have in their heads where they're like, oh, I'm an actor, so it must make my job harder than yours, which is ludicrous. Like, it's honestly ludicrous. So, yeah, I would say, you know, yeah, you're probably lovely. If you are, well done. If not, please, please be nice. I think, and I don't know, maybe that's like an archaic thing. Maybe that's a slightly old fashioned. I hope that that's changing and that, you know, as we kind of move forward, we're a slightly different generation who understand that we absolutely definitely couldn't do the amazing stuff that everyone has to do to make a show happen. But I definitely have met some people who are just so rude and it drives me mad. It drives me mad.
Yeah. The thing that annoys me about it is that, like, you're not going to get good results from that.
Right. Like, what, you're not making your experience better. You're not, you know, we all need each other. And why would you want to work in a room full of people who you've made hate you? I don't understand.
Yeah.
Very confusing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very confusing. And then the last one is director.
Ah, that's good. It's difficult, isn't it? Because there's such a wide range. Mm. Again, like, I think it's a really difficult career. They're all really difficult careers, aren't they? But like, allowing for the fact that other people in the room also have really good ideas, I think, is important. I think that it's a really special quality in a director when they are brave enough to allow or just like listen to other ideas in the room. Whether that's, the lighting designer or the movement director or the fight director, all of those. I feel like that's often when really special things happen.
Yeah.
Because inevitably, some people have expertise in things that, you know, they've spent literally years focusing on. Directors. A play, Amy. Imagine it. A play.
Wouldn't it be wonderful?
What a dream. Are they real? Did they happen?
Do you know what? That is such a funny... Like, I was thinking that. I was like, oh, imagine if it was all just a dream. Just a really long dream.
Honestly, I really feel like in the early days I was waking up and being like, oh god, no, it is actually happening. That first lockdown I definitely was kind of shaking awake and it's real. Yeah, okay. Oh dear.
Oh yeah, okay. Oh, back to my craft projects.
Yeah, I know. Still can't knit.
Oh, still can't knit. Who can knit?
I know, for goodness sake.
If you could go back to one show that you've worked on, which would you go back to and why?
That is a great question. That's a great question. I'm trying to think. It's difficult, isn't it? There are shows that I just was so proud of and I had such a good time doing, and I feel like reliving that would be lovely. And that's for kind of different reasons. I did Swallows and Amazons at Bristol Old Vic, and that was just such a lovely group of people. Every single person was just a joy. I think partly because we were also, all of the actors were playing instruments. And I think for most of the actors, that was absolutely terrifying. And I think that state of kind of terrified vulnerability that everyone found themselves in for the entire process up until press meant that we just had the most amazingly supportive group of people. And we also felt like just a really huge sense of achievement, having kind of gotten the music from sounding like a junior school band to something that was kind of possible. And those shows, even when you were tired and feeling like, I can't say these lines again, don't make me, the audience responses were just amazing. We had, you know, like a little toy ships that sailed out over the auditorium at the end of the shows. And it was just a really beautiful It's a really beautiful show to be a part of and just really fun. I think it would be that one. It's just fun.
Yeah, that does sound great. Mm. That sounds really good. Okay, that brings us to the end of quickfire questions. So I would love to talk to you now about kind of theatre in a more general sense. So I would love to know what life lessons you feel that you've learned from working in theatre that you might not have learned anywhere else.
I think that looking after your mental health becomes like paramount when you probably when you're a freelancer. I mean, you know, in lots of different walks of life, as I've said, but you know, when you're a freelancer, when you know, it's definitely something I've experienced where even the things you do to wind down, like watch TV or go to the theater or go to the cinema, you're often like, oh, I can't watch that actually because I auditioned for that and that's too painful. Like I was waiting for kind of 3 weeks to hear and then it was like, oh, I guess I'm not in it because rehearsals have started. You know, you see a thing that you auditioned for go past on a bus and you're like, oh, it feels like you have to be so careful to be kind to yourself, I think, and also to be kind to other people. Like I said at the beginning, I think you just do see people who it really doesn't bring out the best in some people, which I can totally understand because it is bruising and punishing and it's really hard not to take things personally. So I think definitely, caring for your mental health and really like, you know, appreciating the moments that are lovely. I think that's so key, you know, when you don't know when your next job is going to be and you don't know what your next job is going to be like. You just, when you're in a good week or a good moment, I think really, really learning to kind of enjoy that and not think too far into the future is just a great life skill. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you find that you've kind of built up a sort of mechanism, like sort of mechanisms to protect yourself and to kind of keep yourself safe almost mentally?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's good. I definitely, even when I get a great audition through, I'm like, oh, but those dates would mean that I couldn't go on holiday. So that would be annoying, to be honest, if I got that. Yeah, I mean, this would be good, but that line's not good, is it? So even if I did get this part that's amazing and everything, every other scene is incredible, this line would annoy me every night. So I probably don't want to do this. I feel like I do just kind of, which is not good, is it? But I try and kind of take jobs off of their pedestals a bit, I suppose. Which then means if you do get them, often instead of the mad joy of those early years where I was like, I can't believe it, I've got a job, I'm now like, oh, yeah, pros and cons. So I don't know, I feel like it's kind of flattened the joy a bit, but it's also flattened the kind of the despair. Also just making sure I'm doing other stuff that's not related to my job and finding, like, I cook loads, I bake loads, and finding just joy and relaxation in that.
Yeah.
Is good. Downtime.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Why do you work in theatre? What do you think drives you to work in this industry?
That's a good question. I think it's slightly addictive, actually. I think.
Yeah.
Oh, the kind of adrenaline of a first night is unmatched really by anything else. And those, I think because you're all experiencing that adrenaline and those, you know, weeks where you're doing 13-hour days and you're trying to desperately to learn your lines or pretend you know your lines better than you do, you know, you form such amazing bonds because I think of all of those emotions and adrenaline, and you do feel like you make the most amazing friends. And even if, you know, you can't stay in touch with everyone, obviously that's just impossible, but you just do end up with this kind of list of people who you feel so fondly about. And if you do bump into them, it's gorgeous because you've shared this really special thing. But I think it's addictive. I don't know where else that, like, that adrenaline rush would come from, actually. And I do think that's a big part of it. Is that healthy?
Hey, I'm a podcast host. I'm not a therapist.
Thank you, Amy.
But no, I mean, I completely understand what you mean. It's like, and I think the adrenaline rush isn't, it's not just like the being on stage, because I mean, I get that as well.
Yeah, of
like
course. Kind of, oh my
the
God,
rush of
course.
You know, being backstage and the rush of being part of something, being like part of something so exciting, and the audience, and it's just, it's such a great feeling that why wouldn't you go back? And like, there are so many reasons why you wouldn't go back, because
so
you know,
many
it's
reasons.
Not very well paid, and like, you get shouted at by some arsehole actor or whatever. Like, there's so many,
to be clear.
No.
Not me.
I can't even imagine you shouting at me.
No, I don't do it very well.
No. But yeah, there's so many reasons, like, there could be to like not go back, but there are so many bigger reasons to keep going back, I think.
Totally. Yeah. And that live, you know, that just the sound of an audience on the first night, and oh God, terrifying, makes your stomach go, but it's great. It's such a special thing.
If you could change three things, only three things about theatre, what would you like to change?
Definitely like diversity and inclusion. I mean, like, whether that is backstage, on stage, or in the audience, I feel like I've never done a production where all three of those places have been like fully representative or even kind of close to representative. I feel like we're getting to a point more and more where, you know, quite often the people on stage are quite representative of the country we live in, but often off stage that isn't the case, and definitely often in the audience that isn't the case. I mean, I think that's like, that's huge to me. That's the biggest one, because that's just, it just adds a whole, you know, I mean, it's upsetting, and it's, my dad doesn't feel comfortable going to the theatre. I've had stuff, horrible things said to me when I've been sitting in an auditorium. You know, I remember going back, I was working at the RSC, and I went back to Bath where I grew up and was sat at the Theatre Royal, and a woman turned round to me and my brother before the lights had gone down. You know, we were just having a chat, and she said, "I hope you've been taught how to behave in a theatre." I was like, I'm actually working at the Royal Shakespeare Company at the moment. So,
pretty well versed in that, you know.
I'm actually doing okay. And I,
That is,
it's
God,
mad.
Yeah.
So I think, I think a lot of people are like, oh, well, you know, people don't come to the theatre. Like, black people don't come to the theatre. It's like, well, that's just,
just
absolutely
madness.
Not true.
Yeah.
And also, like, you know, you don't need many of those experiences to make you not want
to
come back. Like, the reason I come back is because I love it. It's where I work. I'm going to push through those experiences. If that had been the first time I'd been at a theatre, I mean, it's just madness to me. It drives me absolutely mad.
And like, what gives me, the thing that really, really like gets me angry about those situations is what gives somebody the right to decide who else should be in that auditorium?
Totally. What
right have you got? What right have you got to ask somebody whether they're going to behave, whether they've been taught how to behave? Like, that's not your right.
Madness.
unless you're like their parent, you know, are you going to behave?
Right, like, exactly.
You don't have a right to say those things.
Also, like, if, you know, if we're halfway through the first act and I've been chatting all the way through, sure, please, madam, turn around and ask me to be quiet. But if the lights have, it's like, it's 7:25. Pipe down.
Give me a break.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. I mean, that's one.
That's awful.
That's one thing, isn't
that's
it?
That's a big one.
I mean, that's a big one. That's a real big one. The other two, you know, I guess every industry could be kinder, couldn't it? And more accountable. I think it can be a pretty tricky place for women. So, yeah, I guess I guess, like equality, diversity, a big two, and more support, I guess, like government support. That feels like that would be a pretty radical shift in terms of the plays that get put on, the writers that can be supported, the bravery that theatres can have to put on shows that they're not 100% sure will sell at like 85% or whatever. Yeah, those would be, I think those would be three things.
Yeah, a great three. Well done.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you very much. And you'll see to that, right? You'll be...
I've got that.
You'll send that letter tomorrow. Fabulous. Yeah. Thank you so much. Much appreciated.
And the big one.
Yeah.
What is the best thing about theatre?
Ah. Oh, I think it's the people, isn't it? Is that what everyone says? I think it's the people. Right.
For a good reason.
Yeah, it is. Like, it's a special, special place. And I think, you know, that notion that people who have very different skills and passions and places where they feel comfortable and places where they excel are all in the same place. So it's this amazing thing where there's like a great variety of types of people all feeling like they are doing something that really shows them off in their best lights, and they are all working together. It's just great. And you laugh. Sometimes obviously people are really annoying, but like just obviously, but of course they are, but generally just like lovely people, the people.
Yeah, that's such a lovely way to put it. I've never sort of explicitly thought about it in that way of like, yeah, people are so different, yet we're all the same.
Totally.
Like, it's kind of, you know, it's so brilliant that you can have somebody who's like fiercely technical and like knows everything about the inner workings of, you know, a lighting desk and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, and you can have the fiercely creative people who are, you know, in the rehearsal. Like, it's just, brilliant.
It's amazing. I think that is a really special combination. It's cool.
And not mutually exclusive as well, by the way. Sorry,
I've just realised
that I've just opposed technical knowledge and creativity, but I did not mean that because technical people are also very creative, and creative people can also be very technical.
I can tell you that for me personally, they are mutually exclusive.
Me too. So for this part of the podcast, I have asked you to prepare a letter addressed to theatre itself. I haven't heard this yet, so I'm very much looking forward to hearing it. So if you are ready, I would love to hear your Dear Theatre letter.
Lovely. This is, I think the first line of this is funny because I have mentioned this more times than perhaps I thought I might in the... Anyway, okay, so Dear Theatre, thanks for the biscuits. There we go. For the way you smell, the dusky hot lights and the wood. Thanks for the blood rush and the sick joy of teetering on the edge of a first night. Thanks for the laughter, the mumbles of the lights coming down. But let's come back better. For everyone, filled with everyone, with seats that look like the streets outside. Thanks, Evie.
That's so lovely. That line with seats. What was it? With seats.
Seats
filled like the streets outside.
Yeah.
So poetic, but also so bloody true.
Yeah. Because that's it. I feel like, the amount of times you walk out of a stage door and you're like, oh, hi, everyone.
Like, yeah.
Where? Oh, no, you weren't into. Okay,
oh, here
cool.
Here you are.
Oh, hi, London. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's definitely certain theatres where that is much more prevalent, I think.
Oh, definitely,
But I think there must be, I mean, there must just be ways to make people feel more welcome and more included and more kind of, you know, safe in that environment. You know, like
100%.
Represented, you know, stories that people actually want to see.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's the thing, I think. Yeah. Some theatres do it so well and it's so noticeable, and it's still, I still find it moving.
Mm.
Going into an auditorium being like, ah, look, this is great. Yeah. And you know, it's just, so, you know, the fact that it is so possible means that there are just some theatres that aren't trying hard enough. Like, that's it, isn't it? Simple.
Mm.
I know that there are, you know, financial blah, 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 but just like, try harder.
Yeah. Yeah. There must be ways to do it that isn't expensive.
Totally. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, thank you. That was lovely. Oh, I really enjoyed hearing that.
What a pleasure.
So we're moving on now to the final section, which is in fact a new section for this series. I've decided it's going to be called the Inspiration Station because I wanted to hear about all the things that that my lovely guests are inspired by. So I would love to know who inspires you.
I think that I'm going to have to say Michaela Cole because just sensational. Yeah. I was like late to the... What's the phrase? Late to the boat? What am I trying to say, Amy?
What? Late to the party?
There we go.
The boat.
We'll edit that out, right? I missed the boat.
Absolutely not.
Late to the party. Oh, no.
That is staying in.
Do I need to swear?
I have all the power.
Actors aren't stupid. I promise we're not all stupid. I was late to the party and or missed the boat. On I May Destroy You, just because I was, you know, I feel like, I don't know about you, I've definitely been like very careful about what I've been watching for the last few months because I just needed like, oh, like I don't know if I can watch a TV series or listen to something that's going to like take me down. I'm feeling quite bruised already. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I like left it and I was like, I know it's going to be amazing, but I can't quite watch it yet. And then watched it kind of, you know, all in 2 days. I just think, like I said about playwrights, the resilience and the self-belief and the perseverance that you need to write something like that, to write anything, but to write something like, I mean, I just think it is incredible. I think what she's saying, the stories, the voices she's putting on the screen are just so impressive to me. She was the year above me at Guildhall and I just think she's amazing. I just think she's absolutely amazing. And I'm so incredibly happy to see, you know, her on the cover of magazines. And I'm so excited to see that so many people in society are celebrating her and her voice and the people that she's representing. It's amazing. Well done, Michaela.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, she's fabulous. She's fabulous. I just think what she's doing is amazing. The quality of her work is incredible. It's so funny. It's so arty. It's creative. It's brave. I just think it's absolutely astounding. I think she's astounding.
Yeah. She did a podcast with Louis Theroux. I don't know whether you've heard it.
100%, obviously. I mean, like, what a combination.
Yeah.
What a dream.
Yeah. I mean, so good. When I saw her name pop up on his podcast, I was like, oh, yes.
Yes. Yes.
Loved it.
So good.
Yeah. Okay, next question. What inspires you?
Ooh. What inspires me? I think... I'm going to say stories, and I know that that's vague and a bit cliche, but it's true, isn't it? I think stories they're such a fundamental part of what it is to be human and how we understand life experience that isn't our own, and especially at the moment, you know, when we can't travel and we can't actually go anywhere, what we do still have and what we can still have are ideas and stories, and God, you just hear about people's lives. Or, you know, I was reading about nutmeg yesterday. I'm doing a little bake along for my partner's nieces and nephews, and you know, the story of what happened to those islands because of this like spicy nut. It's stories inspire me.
What a great answer. What, you pulled that out of the bag?
Thank goodness. What a relief.
Nutmeg.
I've been
circle.
Practicing for weeks.
What an actor.
I'm glad you've asked me, Amy. I guess I'd have to say.
Okay. Where would you say that you feel the most creatively inspired?
I mean, probably in front of an audience. I think I get so scared in rehearsal rooms. I get so paralyzingly scared often. And so although they can sometimes be really creative, sometimes I think I'm so scared of making a mistake that I kind of stop myself a bit. But there's something about being in front of an audience where it's like, oh, I mean, like, you know, it's now, isn't it? It has to be now.
I could do anything.
I could do literally anything. And what are they going to do? Drag me off the stage? Maybe. I think there is something about that combination of nerves and also just seeing faces looking back at you does something inevitably. Like, you're not performing to an empty space. You're performing to that person there and this person who's laughing, or that person who looks like they'd rather be anywhere else. And that inevitably kind of, yeah, sparks you a bit, I think, and kind of drives you on to do better and try new things maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you ever get nervous?
Oh my God. All the time. All the time. So nervous. So nervous. Yeah. yeah. And even on long, I did a show where we did kind of 205 performances. Mm. And I think it took about 100 performances I think it took about 50 performances for the really like sick nerves to stop. Mm. Like, sick, why do I do this job? Why do I hate myself? but I would say generally do stop when I step onto the stage, which again, I think is like a kind of thing that you hear a lot of people say, for which I am just eternally grateful, because I think the level of nerves I experience if they didn't stop when I walked onto the stage would be just unworkable with. The idea though of, right, the idea now though of, I guess we've all had such a long break. I know that a few theatres opened in the summer, but for most people in the industry, there has been such a long time away.
Yeah.
I feel like, yeah, the next first night is going to be, whoo.
Huge.
Yeah. Huge. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be crazy.
Yeah. Madness. But yeah, I definitely get nervous. Oh, Lord. Oh. Especially at the Globe, where you can just see everyone. They're not even in the dark. You can just fully see everyone's face. Absolutely horrifying. Goodness me.
You know, there's been a few times where I've had to go on the stage during shows at the Globe, and that is when you're not an actor, my God. That is literally horrifying.
So bad.
I had to run on stage during EM. I had to run on with my team, and we had to run. It'd just been a scene where they were singing and hacking up a table with an axe. So we had to run on.
Of course.
In a very, very short space of time, run on, grab all the bits of like debris with these gloves on, drag the table off running. And it just was terrifying every night.
Oh, no.
Because it's just like thousands of people like looking nightmare. At you going, you've right. missed that bit.
Why should not pick that up bit up?
Yeah.
Don't fall over.
Oh, yeah. My God. Yeah. The worst.
Oh, so scary. Yeah.
What have you discovered this week that you have felt inspired by? Can be as small or as big as you like.
Oh, that's a very good question. I have been watching The Investigation on Channel 4, BBC?
I don't know.
Anyway, it's a crime drama. It's based on the woman who was killed in the homemade submarine. Horrible, like absolutely horrible. I don't know. I feel like we've had quite a lot of unpleasantly kind of salacious crime dramas in recent years. And that as a genre is something I generally find true crime. Sorry, to be specific and importantly specific. I feel like it's a really tricky thing. I don't know. Like, the idea of enjoying a true crime thing feels really icky. Anyway, I think this is really brilliantly written. It's made in collaboration with her parents. They don't ever mention the murderer's name. You don't ever see an actor playing him. I don't know. I suppose that it just showed me a different way of doing something that felt better. It felt like they'd like strived to make something better, and that felt it's also very good, very good acting.
I'll have to look it up. So we're very nearly at the end of the podcast, but I would love to hand the reins over to you for if there's anything else that you'd like to say, anything you'd like to get off your chest, promote, anything really. The floor is yours if you'd like it.
I wish I had something to promote, Amy. Unfortunately absolutely not, other than, you know, jam. Maybe I've been making a lot of jam recently, and I don't think so, other than like, I just think this is so lovely. And as a podcast, it's such a nice thing. And listening to the other episodes and hearing different perspectives, I think it's just like a really healthy, lovely thing to do, especially while we're all in this hiatus and pause. And so thanks for having me. So nice.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you here and to hear all of your memories and to hear your experiences and to hear your lovely laugh, because that's just so infectious in the greatest way.
No, not that's infectious. Okay. No, not in a dangerous,
pandemic way. Thank you so much.
Oh, what a pleasure. Thanks, Amy. So nice to see you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of That's Theatre, Darling. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you fancy giving the equivalent of a round of applause, you can do this by taking a moment to leave a review, subscribe, and why not just tell all of your friends about it. See you next time.